Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Oh, hey, what's up? Yes, indeed it is. Welcome into it. It is the weekend edition of the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier. So wonderful to have you along for the ride like you do every single weekend. Broadcasting out of the heart of the nation here in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship here at the Hoosier Media Network studios in Wichita, Kansas, all over the country. Multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to us. So great to have you, your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every weekend. Got a couple new radio stations. Want to welcome aboard here. We've been growing like a weed, man. It is awesome. I thank you guys so much all over the country. And we're moving ourselves eastward bound. What was this saying? Go west, young man. Well, now this one's go east, baby. And the Hoosier Nation continues to grow. Want to welcome in a few new stations in Mississippi and in Alabama. I love you guys. Welcome in Talk Radio 1580 AM WPMO, the talk of South Mississippi, and the voice of Lower Alabama. Talk Radio 1000 WJNZ. You guys are awesome. Appreciate you joining us here on The Voice of Reason as well. Pretty soon you'll become a Hoosier-holic. You already are. You're now part of the Hoosier-holic family, and it's so great to have you on board with us. You can find our website, HoosierReason.com, H-O-O-S-E-R, Reason.com, and our social media, which is all the same handle as well, at Hoosier Reason. All right, bottom of the hour, we have Aria Lightstone. He worked formerly with the Trump administration. He was the senior advisor to the ambassador to Israel. He was one that really had a lot to do with crafting of the Abraham Accords, if you remember that, actually making Jerusalem with our embassy and trying to protect our relations with Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu and trying to create peace in the Middle East, which surprisingly Donald Trump did, right?
That's right. Donald Trump did that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that was part of his entire team. So Aria Lightstone, he's also author of his own book, Let My People Know. He is in Israel, and we'll chat with him at the bottom of the hour to get the latest on the conflict and the relations that we have right now with Israel and the Biden administration and so much more. So we'll do that all here in just a bit. I don't want to waste any time because obviously things always love to happen during the weekends when we're here covering it, which no one else is able to do. As right now, as we're speaking, the National Rifle Association is holding their annual convention in Houston. Where are you? Dallas, Texas. That's where you're at, Chad. Dallas, Texas. As former President Donald Trump currently speaking at that event.
What's trending today?
And let's go live to that just a couple of minutes and see what he has to say live at the podium at the NRA convention of 2024.
To make a call back to my country. And I said, let me guess, you're going to call the president, my friend, who is my friend. He's a great guy, but he likes Mexico and I like us. I mean, what can I tell you, right? That's the deal. Just like President Xi, he likes China and I like the USA. That's why they paid billions of dollars that no other president got 10 cents. So may I take a moment to make a call? Yes, you may. Please hurry up because I have other appointments. He comes back about 3 minutes later. We have decided to provide you, sir, with 28,000 soldiers free of charge, of course. And it is our great honor to do so. And in addition to that, we will have a stay in Mexico policy where all of these criminals that are coming into our country will stay in Tijuana. You had to see Tijuana. This was breathtaking to see this. They weren't allowed into our country. Got everything. And the woman from the State Department, a very nice woman, very, very good, very loyal to the country, but a lousy negotiator. She said, I've been working on this for 25 years. I said, I've been working on it for about 2 hours and I got everything. I got everything. And then when this guy with no IQ, he's a low IQ individual, our president. Think of this. We have a low IQ individual as our president, and he's dealing with Steele. He's dealing with President Xi. We will start negotiation now. There's no games. He's dealing with Putin. He's dealing with Kim Jong-un. He's dealing with Macron of France. That's another one. He charged our companies 25% tax. I said to Mnuchin and the other people, go and tell them we're not going to have our companies pay 25% tax to France. Why would they do that? Why would they do that?
All right. That's enough. That's Donald Trump right now speaking at the NRA convention. I love it. Don't you love when Donald Trump just kind of goes off the cuff? I know there's the teleprompter sitting in front of him right now watching the video, but man, you don't care. He's just telling stories. He's having a great time, and he's in front of a crowd that really enjoys him. And a nice turnout for the NRA convention this year of 2024. I've heard 60,000 to 70,000 to 80,000 people showing up to this one in Dallas. And of course, then the protesters on the other side standing outside chanting and hooting and hollering and doing their thing. They move from the universities for the anti-Israeli, we hate Jews, you know, we hate Zionist mindset to now we're just going to go after the guns and the NRA, where they did an interview with the local, what was it, CBS channel, just right earlier on Saturday as the convention was kicking off. And the Students Demand Action organization was out there talking to the media about what they're doing to try and protest the gun rights activists coming into the country.
Today, we're here to call out the gun industry and to call on gun industry accountability and also gun violence accountability in America. As we all know, gun violence is the number one killer of young adults in America. Today actually marks the 6-year anniversary of the Santa Fe mass shooting in Santa Fe, Texas. And next week marks the 2-year anniversary of the Robb Elementary School shooting that happened in Uvalde, Texas. And one of the things that we're calling out today specifically is that the NRA convention is happening right now, yet they're not acknowledging the fact that there are quite literally anniversaries of mass shooting occurring as we speak. They are not being remorseful. They do not care. And for that reason, we're out here today to call them out and to hold them accountable for their flaws, as today should be a memorial for people who lost their lives to rifles, to gun violence in America.
All right, so that's from the local CBS channel down there in Dallas as they talk about some of these protesters. These Students Demand Action, and they want accountability. They're going to hold the NRA accountable. Why the NRA has anything to do with that, I'm not quite sure, as they talk about gun crimes and gun violence and mass shootings and so on and so forth. I've said this many times before, and for our new listeners out there, again, I'm 35. I am a millennial. I'm part of the younger generation, and this entire program that we have is dedicated to try and prepare the young generation to be able to take that torch, take the mantle, and be able to run with it with the leadership and what we need moving forward, because my generation is about ready to take hold of this, and we better be prepared, because I really don't want our generation to be known as the ones that are the AOC types.
I am told this is a garbage disposal.
I don't want to be labeled as that generation. I want to be the ones that actually fix things, although the ones behind me apparently are the more conservative generations looking at mine saying, what are you doing? So we have the Students Demand Action at the NRA convention wanting to hold the NRA accountable for what? I don't really know. They say that there's all these mass shootings and crimes and gun violence for young individuals and so on and so forth. And while that is a cause for concern, we could go down the argument of why that's a stupid way to do it. But can we at least acknowledge that standing outside of a building holding signs and yelling at people is not an effective way to change things? And I said that during the entire protest at the universities as well, for the free Palestine, anti-Israeli, rah, we don't like Jews people, because now it's totally cool and hip to be anti-Semitic for some reason. That if you're going to do something productive. And I'm not talking about violence. Are you, Andy, you're talking about like Black Lives Matter and Antifa destroying buildings and taking over cities? No, I'm not. Not at all, in any way, shape, or form. I told the students at the, well, I've been saying it on the radio. If they listen, that's their own prerogative. But I've been saying that if I was a college student once, I ran the college Republicans at my university when I was in Ohio, that if you're going to do something, then join student body government and try to change the policies on the university grounds, which is what those groups were doing on campus. If you don't like where the money is going from, then try to get different donors to contribute to your university. You can do things. But now we have the professional protesters out there where they think that creating a hashtag on social media and yelling at people with a sign and chanting really cheesy slogans is somehow going to change the narrative on a conversation. And these individuals, just like we played in the first hour with the those that are had no clue what those chants even meant, from the river to the sea. Okay, what river and what sea? I don't really know. Do you know what Zionism means? That means that you don't want a free Palestine? We don't like Zionists because they don't want a free Palestine. When you have that little intelligence, it's the things that make you go, and maybe you should be a little more educated on the issues before you just become the professional protester. It's very sad. And as we've mentioned many times before, the question really is that really the young generation that's going to take over the Democrat Party? Because if so, one of two things are going to happen. Either the Democrat Party is going to wake up really quickly about the lack of substance they have in their party to win new people over, or they're literally going to change the narrative to be that low of an IQ level conversation that we have to have every day. And we're already starting to do that, are we not? We already have to have the conversation of what a boy or a girl is. What genders do we identify with? What's a trigger word? What's hate speech? What's so on and so forth? We've already had to lower ourselves into the sewers to have these absurd and ridiculous conversations. But for the gun conversation especially, can we at least come to the acknowledgement that there are more firearms in this nation than any other nation on the face of the earth, with close to like 8 billion rounds of ammunition, close to 300 million firearms that are sold in this nation, and yet the levels compared to with crime rates are extremely low. And the vast majority of the crime or the violence or the deaths that are done by young individuals with firearms are suicides. Now, should we have a conversation about a gun, or should we have a conversation about suicides for youth with mental health issues? Well, right now, according to the numbers that I've seen, at least, that fifth graders, my daughter's about ready to go into fifth grade next year. Again, blows my mind. Fifth graders had the same level of depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, and mental health issues, they said, as someone who was in a mental institution in the 70s. Put that into perspective for a minute. Fifth graders. Why? Is it the social media where they're looking at the likes? Is it something in the food and the water? Is it the broken families? Is it the stress that the families have in seeing the parents and they're just reacting? What's the deal with the young generation, fifth graders, that are having to deal with anxiety, depression, and suicidal tendencies at levels that we've never seen in this nation before? And then we have the, you know what, the huevos to turn around and say that it's the gun's fault and it's gun advocates' fault. And I asked before, is this going to be a campaign issue for the Democrats? I think it is, because they haven't learned their lesson yet. Every time they bring up the Second Amendment, you know their poll numbers drop. Even for Democrats, they don't want to talk about gun control, because even Democrats own firearms across the nation. So if a Democrat out there, these activists, are advocating to try and repeal the Second Amendment, which is their ultimate goal, let's just admit it, or whether they want to curb it, these red flag laws, these, the common sense gun reform that they like to use all these trigger words on, pun intended with the trigger word, all these different phrases they like to use that, again, they have no clue what they actually mean. They talk about them and their poll numbers sink. They talk about them and they become extremely unpopular. So they've resorted to using children to try and play off the emotion, pulling on the heartstrings of the young children. I suffered a shooting and therefore it's traumatized me. Guess what? So have I. And I'll tell that story later on. But you can't pull on the heartstrings there and yet take out the complete logic. Why shouldn't we address the mental health issue on why a fifth grader wants to end their life, as opposed to saying, let's just take the gun away so that way they can find a different way to off themselves if they're in that state of mind? Why don't we have a rational, real, legitimate conversation on these issues? Oh, that's right, because progressives don't have the solutions. They want to use it as a way to control and increase their power and increase regulatory authority from the federal government. That's right, I forgot about that. That's more coming up. Stay here.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour. So we have the lack of conversation, lack of substantive conversation on many of these issues. And I get it. It's a political thing. Both sides of the aisle do it. We heard Donald Trump at the NRA convention just a few minutes ago talking about immigration, and we still haven't passed an immigration bill. I get it. It's a substantive bill that's used on. And again, remember, like I said, from here on out, for the rest of the year, it's all politics. Anything any politician says, anybody running for an office says from this point on, is a political statement used on the campaign trail. That's how they're going to win people over. The question is, what are they going to talk about? Obviously, the Biden administration struggles a little bit on some issues on, I don't know, like substance on what they can campaign on a success for them, because nothing's been successful for their entire administration. They can try and lie to us about Donald Trump going out of office with 9% inflation, which was not true because it was sitting at 1.4 to 1.6. So that's not the case.
Well, it was actually on the trajectory of,
But it wasn't. And it took a year to go that. And if, you know, for example, if they wanted to try to use that argument, say, well, the environment was set for it to begin to climb. So nothing we could have done could have prevented that. It was the COVID pandemic. It was the Trump economy. It was Albert. And I mean, even though he left and it was 1.4, 1.6% inflation, it was on the way up. So we couldn't have done anything because it takes time for the economy to actually reflect different policy changes, which I get under the concept of Reaganomics. I get it. When you do something in the economy, it's kind of a ripple effect. It takes a while for it to actually show the effects of that. However, there's a prime example to show the opposite of that. Hat tip to Fox News this weekend. As you know, the president of Argentina, Javier Milei, has been, you know, the crazy guy with the wild hair, right? That like dates supermodels or something. I don't know what he does. Kind of an odd duck on the personal front, but a rock star when it comes to economic issues and fighting socialism in South America. He literally went to the United Nations and railed on socialism and how we need to defend the Western civilization against socialist policies. He's kind of a rock star. Spoke at CPAC a few months ago. He's been able to turn their economy around with his policies. In fact, inflation, poof, disappeared within months of his administration being able to implement these things. So I get it. Yes, there is a ripple effect where it takes time for economic values to take hold, economic regulations to take hold. However, there's a difference between government doing it and allowing private markets to work themselves out. If you remember under the Barack Obama administration, and even before that, during the Clinton administration and the Bush Jr. Administration, when we saw the real estate bubble burst, when we saw the economy crash, when we saw the too big to fail, we need to bail out the auto industry, we need to bail out the bank industry, we need to bail out this person, that person. When you inject money in, I always use this metaphor, and I'm going to continue to use it because at least in my mind, it makes sense, and hopefully for you, it does as well. And I'm not a mechanic. I'm not an auto guy at all, but I see it as the air bubble in the brake system, right? Every time you print money and inject it into the system, boom, it's an air bubble in the brake system. And as you know, your brakes don't work very well when you hit your brakes on your car and there's an air bubble in your brake line. Your brakes don't stop you. So you have to take it to the mechanic. They bleed the brakes. They get the air bubbles out. And then, boom, it works streamlined. It works very nice. Every time that we inject money in through the government, we invest it, and I say that in air quotes here for the radio listeners, we invest in the economy, we print money, we borrow money, we inject it in from the federal government, it creates an air bubble, and that bubble's going to burst at some point. When you get rid of those air bubbles and you allow the private sector to actually have stability, you allow the private sector to grow, you allow small business to grow, when you allow that type of environment, guess what? There's no more air bubbles. Inflation goes down. The consumer spending goes up. The GDP growth expands drastically. And then you get to see a great economy. What a concept, right? In Argentina, Javier Milei is doing that. And it's proof positive that it works. So you can't really use the argument that, well, Donald Trump set the environment for 9% inflation, 12% inflation under the Biden administration, when you could have prevented something like that. But you did create 15 million jobs, right? Yeah, sure.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason meets radio, this is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it. It is the Voice of Reason's Weekend Edition. I am Andy Hoosier. So great to have you with us. Really happy to have our next guest on the program. Been a little bit since we've chatted with him, and a very important guest. Really honored to have him back on the show as we look at some of the latest conflict going on in Israel and the Middle East region, as he is the former senior advisor to the U.S. ambassador to Israel, also one of the individuals that helped form the Abraham Accords under the Trump administration, and author of the book, Let My People Know. It's Aria Lightstone on the line with us here. Aria, how are you, my friend?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm better speaking to you, but I got to tell you, the world is challenged when it doesn't have American leadership, and it does not have American leadership today.
No, and I'm hoping we can change that by this fall. But I, first off, we have to ask, make sure that everybody's safe around you and your area. But it is unbelievable that the United States is not wanting to support Israel the way that it needs to. And the fact that we have so many protesters that actually are making a difference in a negative way here in the United States blows my mind on how that's making our own federal government waffle with our support. What's going on here, do you think?
I think you've got two different things over here. I think number one is that you've got a lack of clarity from the very top. On day number one, President Biden said all of the right things about Israel, except for keeping Israel like they would any other country. For example, President Biden got up to say, by the way, we are absolutely going to support and stand with Israel, but they should be very cautious not to perform any international war crimes. And that's a ridiculous comment to make. We've spoken about Ukraine. You could be on whatever side of that issue you want. But President Biden has never once said, and by the way, we caution the Ukrainians in terms of international war crimes. When President Biden showed up to Israel, the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, and Jordan all refused to meet with him based upon a fake news story. If you remember the supposed Israeli missile that blew up the Indonesian hospital that incinerated 5,000 people instantaneously, yeah, which turned out to be a Hamas rocket that hit a parking lot next to the hospital that damaged some electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And based upon the inability to call baloney to those world leaders who then were refusing to meet with President Biden based upon fake news. So there's a red carpet for anti-Semitic tropes from around the world, and especially in our, quote, elite Ivy League campuses, to rear their ugly heads. And I'll say this, because I'm not positive your listeners have taken this take. I think it's a good thing. Yeah. I think it's fine that we see where these campuses stand, and it's not the majority of the campuses. And even on the campuses where it's happening, it's certainly not the majority of the students. But this type of hatred is cultivated and subsidized by the taxpayers' dollars, and enough is enough.
Yeah, I don't know how they're allowed to continue on. And they have no leverage. I don't understand where the leverage is coming from to sit out there and chant and protest and cause havoc and interrupt ceremonies at graduations and thinking that they're actually doing something beneficial at all, which you mentioned a lot of the media coverage on here. Is it getting better? Because we continue to hear about these tens of thousands of Palestinians that are dying because of the slaughter, the genocide happening from Israeli troops. But are those numbers actually accurate? Because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't those being recorded by the Palestinian and Hamas media that's actually reporting these numbers? So I'm assuming those are a little bit skewed right now, aren't they?
Thank you for pointing that out, and I appreciate your brutal honesty. The official numbers that come out of Gaza are from the Gaza Health Ministry. Now, that sounds like a fancy word, but the Gaza Health Ministry is the Hamas Health Ministry. And let's just understand very clearly, what is the goal of Hamas? The goal of Hamas is to cause as many civilian deaths as humanly possible, both on the Israeli side and on their side, because they know if they do that, they can never defeat Israel in an actual frontal war. So they've decided to allow the great Western elite to fight the battle on their behalf. So they know if as many bloody Palestinians could wind up reported dead or injured as possible, then that will cause the West to force Israel to stop. Hamas will ultimately still be in power, and they will call this a victory. In fact, not only will they call it a victory, they will call the massacre of October 7th their Independence Day. And who buys into these numbers? Well, the United Nations buys into these numbers. And the United Nations is who the United States of America, our administration under President Biden, quotes those numbers. Now, something we did not see in the media is the United Nations just this past week revised their numbers and said everything we've been told is wrong, not wrong by 10%, not wrong by 20%, but wrong by over 100%. Now, have you seen that covered anywhere?
Of course not. No, of course not.
Okay.
That's unbelievable. Wow. It is insane. And then, of course, they draw this line. And I don't get it, Arya. I mean, you're out there. You see what's going on. Why in the world is Rafah the line here, the line in the sand where they say, no, you're not allowed to go past that point. You're not allowed to move further anywhere. And even our own government says, we understand why you want to eliminate this terrorist organization wanting to destroy your nation, but you're not allowed to go past this line of Rafah, or we're going to stop sending resources over to you. Why here? Why is this the line when all of this information, like you said, is inaccurate? All of this hype is completely false. And you still have a terrorist organization right on your borders wanting to destroy and call for the death and the destruction of Israel. But we're not allowed to cross this line. I don't get it.
So something that I think will resonate with Americans sitting in our towns and cities is we recall the people who stood up to say, defund the police. And then so how are you going to police or make sure that our neighborhoods are protected? So we're going to send social workers. Yeah. And now we see 5 years later how well that's gone in our major cities and in our towns. This is the same people with the same policies who say, no, Israel, if you just don't go into Rafah, just Hamas will be reformed, or maybe there will be what they call a revitalized Palestinian Authority. They'll give back the hostages that they're holding as human shields, and they're going to rebuild a Palestinian state in the image of Costa Rica. The naivete that somebody needs to have is frankly insulting to anybody with two IQ points, and certainly to anybody who has the ability to think about the Middle East intelligently. It's a joke, the propositions that they're proposing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievable. We're talking with Aria Lightstone here. In Israel, there was about a week or two ago, there was the comment about a potential ceasefire meeting where apparently some people had agreed to it. There was some idea of having a ceasefire, trading some of the hostages that were ongoing in this conflict. And then the media ran with it and said that Hamas had agreed to the ceasefire. So Israel are the ones that didn't agree to it, and therefore now they're the insurgents again that are moving forward with this when Hamas actually wanted to do a ceasefire, which again shows the political bias that's going on in the media. But what was the conversation, and was there truly a ceasefire option on the table that Israel was considering at that time, do you think?
There was a ceasefire that Israel proposed, and the ceasefire that Israel proposed was so forward-leaning that no other country would have done something like this in order to be able to get their people back at the great sacrifice of Israel allowing Hamas to potentially stay in power over a lengthy period of time, this ceasefire, as they call it. And all this is happening in the backdrop of Secretary of State Blinken saying, look, if we can just get them to a ceasefire, we will do everything we can to move that into something that's more permanent. Every time Blinken or Biden or Sullivan say anything like that, explain to me what Hamas needs to do to negotiate. They have these useful idiots negotiating on their behalf. And so therefore, the deal that Israel proposed was rejected by Hamas. Hamas came back with a second completely distinct deal and said they've accepted that. The CIA, our U.S. CIA, said that Hamas accepted a ceasefire deal without reporting on any of the details of that ceasefire deal. So all of the press ran saying that Israel is once again the belligerent party and not the people. Keep 133 hostages, including five Americans, in dark tunnels, the women raping repeatedly, the others abusing horrendously, and somehow we developed that there is some equivalence in between these two parties, the democratically elected state of Israel, and terrorist is too nice of a word for the group called Hamas.
We're talking with Aria Lightstone. He is the author of the book, Let My People Know. He's also the former senior advisor to the ambassador to Israel under the Trump administration. He helped craft some of those Abraham Accords. We'll get back to Aria here in just a minute. There is some breaking news that happened here this week, and really, according to Bloomberg News, as Benny Gantz, who I'm sure you don't know that name, but one of the opposition Israeli leaders in the nation of Israel as part of the three-man war cabinet, has made the announcement that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu needs to offer a new plan to bring back some of the hostages with the ongoing battle against Hamas and not go into Rafah and try to reformat some of the military operations, or else he's out, man. He's done. According to the headline with Bloomberg, Gantz says he'll quit unless Netanyahu shifts to a new Gaza plan. Now, do you think that's really going to happen? You think that's going to? No, okay. In fact, the statement from Netanyahu has come out right away already this weekend saying, quote, the conditions set by Benny Gantz are washed up words whose meaning is clear. The end of war and defeat for Israel, abandoning most of the hostages, leaving Hamas intact and the establishment of a Palestinian state. So obviously Benjamin Netanyahu not backing down from the pressure from outside forces, even with our own government like Chuck Schumer and the Democrats here advocating for the removal of Benjamin Netanyahu from his seat or even from the opposition from within. So when we come back, Arya, I want to talk about the the way the government structure actually works in Israel, because I don't think people know this, especially the protesters here in the United States that are advocating for the decimation essentially of Israel. I don't think they understand how the government actually gets elected and how they actually function. Benjamin Netanyahu is one of the only prime ministers that's been able to actually put together a coalition of leaders to run as an entire cabinet and coalition together. That's different from like the United States politics, where they get elected as an individual, unless you're the president and vice president, but you actually run as an entire team. And a few years back when Benjamin Netanyahu, if I could speak, actually did leave office, they weren't able to elect a proper prime minister because they weren't able to gather enough votes from all the different groups, all the different political leaders, left, right, Christian, Jew, Muslim, all together to actually form a team to run in the election. So what's the popularity look like for Benjamin Netanyahu? We'll do that when we come back with Arya Lightstone right around the corner. One more segment left here on your weekend edition of The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yeah, darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Got a couple minutes left here. Let's continue our conversation with Arya Lightstone. Let's talk about the popularity of Benjamin Netanyahu. Is he still popular in the nation of Israel?
Yeah, so ask your listeners to pay very careful attention to any time a Democrat accuses Israel of something, they call the Netanyahu government. The same thing as Trump derangement syndrome, just they've decided that Netanyahu is a fine replace for Trump. And they'll accuse the Netanyahu government of doing this, or the Netanyahu government for doing that, or the extreme right Netanyahu government for doing something. And that's what they'll say. They should know, because they're U.S. senators, and at least their staff, although their staff probably went to Harvard, so they're probably not that smart, that they should know that Israel is a coalition, it's a parliamentary coalition, but what's unique is that since the war began, it's a unity government. It has both the prime minister as well as Benny Gantz from the opposition sitting together. And all war decisions are made unanimously. So the decisions that are made are not made by 64 out of 120 seats, which Prime Minister Netanyahu represents that, but it's close to 105 out of 120 seats, which means that the U.S. Senate can agree 85 to 15 on that today is Tuesday. So the fact that Israel is able to conduct the war at an 85% majority, people are just using Netanyahu as a dirty word, and they're not understanding that that by attacking him directly, they're subverting the democracy. Have you heard Chuck Schumer ask for Sinwar, the head of Hamas, to step down so there could be a more reasonable negotiator on the Hamas side? Have you heard Chuck Schumer ask our friends in Qatar to go ahead and put more pressure on the Hamas leadership who sit in the Four Seasons in Qatar to release American hostages? No. Instead, they call on for elections in the Democratic ally Israel and directly attack the democratically leader Benjamin Netanyahu. That doesn't hurt Israel.
Yeah.
Israel will be fine. It hurts the rest of the world around Israel, who says, holy cow, you, America, can't be clear on this issue. What issue are you going to be clear on?
Yeah. Well, and it's additionally surprising that Chuck Schumer, who is a Jewish individual and stood at one of the pro-Israeli rallies early on during this conflict, is now the one calling for the removal of Benjamin Netanyahu. And like you said, they're not calling for terrorists to step down or for their change in government to happen. It's weird that we would call on Benjamin Netanyahu to do that, just because, like you said, they don't understand it, or they don't think the American people understand it. And it's just another version of Trump derangement syndrome to go after one particular individual. But I'm assuming with how he's led, and I've seen a lot of his speeches, I've seen him on the battlefront, I've seen him talking to soldiers left and right, that I'm assuming he's still a relatively popular guy out there, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there are two things to be true at the same time. I think the people of Israel have a great deal of confidence in Prime Minister Netanyahu to execute this war. I think the people of Israel have a great deal of concern that Prime Minister Netanyahu has been the prime minister for a great many years, and October 7th happened ultimately on his watch.
Yeah.
And so again, it's conflicting. On 9/11, you know, George Bush rose to great popularity, and the same thing absolutely could happen with Prime Minister Netanyahu. But there are those who looked at 9/11 and said, well, how could this happen on Bush's watch? And so it's a democracy, and the best part about democracies is let the people of Israel decide. Why does Chuck Schumer have a vote in terms of who the Israeli prime minister should or should not be?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. We got a couple minutes left here, Ariane. I appreciate your time very much. I want to ask you about Iran for a minute, because they did send the drones out, sent out the missiles. You guys, obviously, with your Iron Dome, able to stop it out there. But they continue to taunt. The headlines that we see from the media is that they continue to taunt Israel to want to actually respond in kind and start a greater conflict. Where are we on the Iranian side? And do you think that will continue to escalate, or is that about over now?
No, the Iranian side started on October 7th in the morning, continues up until this evening with additional rockets being fired from Lebanon. Iran may sit in Tehran, but their proxies are the Houthis, who stopped global shipping in Yemen, and Hezbollah, who's a terror organization in Lebanon, who's been firing and has succeeded in killing 24 Israelis since October 7th, and Hamas, who sit in Gaza. All of these are Iran. There is no separation in between that. And what's crazy is that this administration under Joe Biden has been rushing to support the Iranian rush towards a nuclear weapon and have actually been issuing arms embargoes on the democratically elected state of Israel, which is our ally. And here, Donald Trump was so incredibly correct. If you don't recognize your enemy, if you don't name your enemy, if you don't threaten your enemy will take advantage of you. And all we try to do is to coddle and to appease the Iranians under President Biden. This is what winds up happening. You have the Houthis stopping shipping in the Gulf, and you have Hezbollah raining missiles down in Iran. You have Hamas perpetrating the worst act of terror since the Holocaust.
There it is. That's Ariel Lightstone. We appreciate his time very much. And we're out of time, my friends. We'll have to do it again next weekend. Until then, be your own voice of reason. Be that catalyst for change. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Have a great weekend. Bye.